Test, test. Test. Test, test.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, that's not bad, is it?
Well, pretty quick, I gotta admit. I mean, I just got my groceries unpacked. That's pretty quick. I'm pretty impressed with that.
Now I'm sitting
Most
here.
Guys aren't sufficient, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I really appreciate you.
What you got, buddy? Oh, it's my pleasure. You know that.
Yeah. Well, my program is called One on One, and it's a chance to really talk with Indiana sports personalities. And I've been fortunate to get the likes of Larry Bird and Oscar Robertson and Johnny Wooden and you know, Colts and Pacers and so forth. So I've been wanting to get with you for a long time.
Well, and, you know what? When you got to go, if you go by alphabetical order, it's a long way down there.
That's true. And I don't think there's anybody left after you either.
I mean, there's not many people down in the disease. You know what I'm saying? But I appreciate you calling me. No, I really didn't.
No, it's great. You know, this show will air twice, and it'll go up on the website as a podcast, you know, for like a long, long time, hopefully. And really what I want to do is get these, you know, have these shows available, whether it's a library or whatever, for years to come. So 50 years from now, if somebody wants to hear Fuzzy Zeller's story, in his own words, you know, they can do it.
Gotcha. Yeah, gotcha.
But we'll cover your...
I'm going to make a fuzzy tonic while you're farting around here, dude.
Not at all.
Not at all. Guess what I'm doing in the process.
Going to enjoy a drink, huh?
I'm making a fuzzy and tonic as we speak, Bubby.
There you go. That's great. Yeah. Well, we will talk about your career and your business as we go along here.
Hey, you talk about whatever you want to. I'll be as honest as I can be. Okay. You know that.
Beautiful, beautiful. We've never really met. I talked with you after a U.S. Open one year. I used to work in Fort Wayne, and you were about to go to the Matt Anthony's there. And I remember I threw out a question to you.
I got me one of those beautiful red coats.
Yeah.
I busted. Yeah, they took care of me. They gave me a red coat. I still have that darn thing. I bet you not many guys can say they still have it either.
You got a red coat and a green coat in your closet somewhere, probably.
Well, yeah, I know. It kind of looked like Christmas back there, but... Yes, it's all good. It's all good.
Okay. Great. Well, we'll get going here. We'll make it official.
You got it.
Okay. Are you in New Albany right now?
No, I'm in Marco, Florida.
Marco, Florida. Is that your winter home?
Yeah, Marco Island. Marco Island's where I'm at.
Okay, beautiful.
I'm down here where it's warm.
You're smart.
I saw the temperatures they're having up north, and I said, ooh, geez, I'm staying south.
You are in the right place at the right time.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful down here right now. It's about 84. I hate to say it to people, but it's about 84, sunshine and beautiful skies.
Okay, nice, nice. Well, you know what? I think we've already started the show. Let's jump right into it.
Well, jump right into it. Mike, give it your best shot, buddy. Okay. You're the one that does this stuff for a living. I don't.
I usually do a formal introduction, but I think we're just going to roll with
this. No, we don't need a forward. Bye, ladies and gentlemen. Fuzzy Zeller on the other line here. Yeah, it's talking to you, Mark.
And your real name is Frank Urban, so I think I can guess, but just for posterity and history's sake, why Fuzzy? How did that nickname come about?
Well, my initials are F-U-Z.
That was my guess.
Right. Well, your guess was right. And I tell you, I have been called Fuzzy all my life. I had a nun in first grade, which I won't mention her last name, but Sister Mary was her first name, James. But again, she always called me Frank. Well, I never would listen when nobody ever called me Frank. I never knew my name was Frank until about the third grade. Isn't that amazing?
A nun gave you the nickname, though.
What? Oh, no, she gave me Frank. She kept calling me Frank, Frankie, and I never answered. I kept taking these papers back home every week to my family. My dad would rip my butt for not paying attention. I'm going, well, she never calls on me. How can I pay attention? She never calls on me. Well, she was calling me Frank, and I never knew my name was Frank.
Christ. Did your dad give you the
story? That is a true story. And like I tell you, her name was Sister Mary, and I won't mention her last name, James. But, that's a true story, Mark.
So who gave you the nickname Fuzzy?
Well, my mother and dad did.
Okay.
You know, my dad was Frank Sr., and I was named after my dad, which was a great name. I mean, a great name, and I honor that damn thing today.
Yeah. It's funny, the name Urban used to be, I don't know if it was ever common, but it used to pop up now and then. You know, we have Urban Meyer, the football coach.
Right.
So, you know, I've known some other Urbans, so that in itself is a unique nickname.
Well, my dad was named, that's my Uncle Herb.
Okay.
That's how he got Urban as the middle initial. But they called him Fuzzy up until he had me. Then he took over Frank. I took over Fuzzy.
I got you. So was that a good nickname to have in school? Did the other kids make fun of it, or did you like having that nickname?
No, I loved it. I didn't know it was a nickname. I just thought it was my real name because, again, my mother and dad always called me Fuzzy. Everybody, my friends and enemies, all called me Fuzzy. So I didn't realize until like third grade that my name was Frank. Because I never, Frank, to this day, and I'm 62 years old, to this day, somebody yells Frank, I'll continue to walk because it doesn't ring a bell with me.
Right. Okay. Well, it's great to have a unique nickname anyway. It's great to be unique in that regard. Now, you're born in New
thank
Albany.
You. Yeah.
How do you get started in golf in New Albany, Indiana? It's not exactly the golf capital of the world.
Well, I understand. No, I understand what you're saying. Everybody thinks when you're born in a Midwestern state with the winters that we have that you're born with two or three strikes against you. It's not necessarily true. I was fortunate. I lived on a golf course when I was growing up. I played basketball during the wintertime to keep me in shape for golf, but I had the opportunity to play golf elsewhere, which was good, and I thank my mother and dad for giving me that opportunity.
You mean in winter or whatever, they would get you to warmer climates where you can play? Or
no, I didn't say wintertime. Now, wintertime, I told you it was basketball season. I mean, when you're a Hoosier, you're a Hoosier.
Right.
You played basketball in the wintertime.
Yeah.
But as soon as it broke freezing, I was on the golf course. And I would tell you, I would go out there at 7:30 in the morning, and I would come back about 7 at night.
Mm. So were you living on a public course or private course?
Everything I've done is public.
Public.
No private. It's all public, yes.
Okay. Okay. And your dad, I take it, was a good player?
What do you mean by good? Now, he was never a scratch. I think 8 handicaps, the best he ever got. My mother got to like a 14. So they were just average golfers.
Okay.
Maybe better than average golfers. Because we look at average golfers as like an 18 handicap, but that's an average golfer. But they might have been a little better than average. But you know what was nice about it, Mark? They gave me the opportunity to play. Like they did all my family, my older brother, my older sister, my younger brother, the opportunity to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Now, there's something about the game that caught my eye that, I don't know. I had a knack for it at a young age. I picked up on it very, very quickly. I guess I'm one of the select few. But yeah. I feel very fortunate to this day to be able to play such a great game as the game of golf.
Yeah. Do you consider yourself self-taught, or did somebody teach you the swing?
I'm going to say more self-taught because there really wasn't what we call teachers back then. Yes, we had club professionals. A guy named Buzz Schultz, they called him the Silver Fox at Valley View Golf Club, got me my start. He gave me the grip stance, always told me the balance. And my lifehood dream was to work in his pro shop, and he said, I want you to work, I want you to play. So I would always say I'd be the one on the range hitting balls, picking them up. Then I'd go play 36 holes. But he would walk by. Bus would always walk by. He said, I want you to try this. I want you to work on this. Not showing me, but he wanted me to develop my own golf swing, my own techniques, which is kind of the way they taught back then. So I would say self-taught.
Okay. Okay. Now tell me about basketball, though. Like you say, you're a Hoosier. You love basketball. Were you a good player?
Well, it was mean. I wasn't big. I couldn't dunk it, but I could touch a net. Is that good? I think my senior year, I got to the bottom of the rim. I thought that was good. Yeah.
Hey, you played through high school, right?
But what the hell? Larry Bird was 6'8". He couldn't dunk the damn thing either. So, I mean, I feel lucky. I really do.
But you played through high school, right? Your senior year?
Yes, I did. And I played all the way through high school. I sure did.
Like, what was
then golf took me the rest of the way.
Right. Like, what was your scoring average, say, as a senior in high school at New Albany?
As far as basketball?
Yeah.
Well, I probably averaged 8 to 10 points a game.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which wasn't bad. I mean, I was a point guard, so my job was to distribute, not necessarily to shoot. So I was a distributor, I wasn't a shooter, although I was a pretty good shot at times.
How did New Albany do in the state tournament while you were there?
Damn it, we God, why'd you bring that up for? I was having a good night to you about that.
I had to.
We made it to the regionals. The one year that we should have probably won it all was my junior year. We made it to the regionals, and we got beat in the regionals. And that really hurt. I mean, only because we had the team and a very good team to win.
Yeah. What was the highlight of your basketball career then?
I don't think I've ever had one. I'm still having them.
Obviously you talked about how you picked up golf at a young age and took to it immediately. But was basketball your favorite sport, or was it always golf?
No, it was always golf.
Yeah.
You know, I did them all. I played football through the ninth grade, and they wanted me to play in high school. And my dad said, son, you know, yes, you're talented at football, but, you know, injuries do happen in football. And I said, you're right.
Yeah.
Golf is my game. When I could have told you when I was 7 or 8 years old that what I wanted to do was play professional golf.
Oh, that's great.
But what was great about living in the state of Indiana is that, you know, we don't play golf in November, December, or January, February. So the basketball kept me in shape for the game of golf.
Yeah. When you told people your ambition, did people think you're crazy? Anybody tell you you're nuts? Go do your homework, or?
Well, I mean, everybody thought you were nuts playing golf back then because nobody did it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was just an outside activity. It was a rich man's sport. But, you know, as I tell young kids today, yes, your dreams are your dreams. You know, my dream came true. I worked hard to get here, and I've loved every minute of it. You know, you're going to have some bumps in your roads, but I have absolutely loved every minute of it.
Mm. As a young kid, did you ever have an embarrassing moment in either golf or basketball?
Yeah, when I was 5 years old, golf. My first tournament I ever played in, I got beat by a 14-year-old on the 19th hole. Damn, that's embarrassing. I should have kicked his butt and I got beat.
I wouldn't call that embarrassing.
That was very embarrassing.
You were five.
Well, that was embarrassing. I was five and he was 14. That trophy, Hurry. He shouldn't have been in the tournament.
I'm thinking about, like, I've had basketball players tell me they shot at the wrong goal or, you know, something like
that.
No,
I never did. No, I never did that. God love you. I've never done that. No.
Okay. So you're an all-around athlete, really. How did you do in the state golf tournament?
Second's the best I ever got.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I came very, very close. And I sniffed it from my sophomore years, junior year, senior year, but there was always somebody that beat me, which was fine. I mean, it's a match play. It's a medal play tournament. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember?
You're not playing well when you go in there. You're not going to score well, but there was always somebody that beat me by just a little bit.
Those guys who beat you, did any of them turn out to be anything? Did they go pro?
As a matter of fact, no. None of them did.
Okay.
Can you believe that? I don't know. I'm not sure how many people in Indiana remember Gary Bettinger. He was probably the best player. Gary Gant, Mike Stone. Yeah, we had a lot of great golfers back then. But Bettinger, he died and passed away here at a young age. But he was probably the best golfer in the state when I was growing up.
Okay.
Of course, we had Cratchit, Billy Cratchit. And, there were a lot of great junior golfers coming up at that time.
Yeah. So when you played for the state championship, did you feel like you played as well as you could and you just got beat by a better player that day, or did you feel like you didn't handle the pressure of the moment?
Well, I mean, it's not pressure. I mean, I never really thought of it as pressure. It could have been what you call whatever pressure, but yeah, I thought I did well. I mean, I performed well. It is a game. It's probably the most difficult game in the world, even at a young age. I wanted my name on that trophy. I mean, I got it on the Open trophy, the Interstate Open, but you know, get that thing in high school, that would have been big time, but it didn't happen. I accept it. And you shoot for bigger goals.
Sure. Were you confident in high school that you could make it to the tour, that you would be a professional golfer?
Yeah. You know what, Margie, it's amazing you say that, but yeah, I was confident. Not because of what happened in high school, but you know, that was my dream. That was my goal. And I think for any young person coming up, when you stand out there and you practice the hours that I practice getting up to where we are now, you know, I look back on it and I say, damn, it was all well worth it. I've had a great ride. It's been a beautiful ride.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, my dream came true. You know, I had those, I had the putts for the Masters. I had the putts for the PGAs and the U.S. Opens, the British Opens, which young kids today, they dream about. But if you dream enough, by golly, those things will happen if you work hard enough.
Yeah, Yeah, when you were growing up as a golfer, say in high school, were there professional golfers that you emulated or particularly admired?
Well, Arnold Palmer was my mentor, I guess, in a way. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I still I respect the guy. I respect Arnold. I respect Bob Hope, all the great golfers. But you know, Arnold, Bob Hope, and Bing Crosby are the ones that got it on TV.
Yeah,
they're the ones that made TV work. And I respect all three of those guys for giving us the opportunity to broaden our sport and make it like a number one thing on TV. It's been outstanding.
Yeah. Did you try to copy Arnold's way of playing, his swing?
How the hell do you do that?
I know. It'd be hard.
Yeah. Too many moving parts.
That's true. Nobody else swung like that.
What a great guy. I tell you what I did try to copy is how he handled people.
Yeah,
and what I mean by that is not only on the golf course, how he treated people with respect, but off the golf course and beyond. Mm-hmm. I watched him, and I, like I say, I've had the opportunity to spend a lot of hours with him, and he is still to this day my idol, and he always will be.
Yeah. You are well known, of course, for your attitude toward golf. You know, you're lighthearted. You didn't take it so seriously. Was it always that way? I mean, were you that way in high school?
God, no, Marky. Listen, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, I used to throw clubs, break clubs. I'd beat a tree down until I killed it. You know, I'd try everything.
Yeah.
Only because I thought it was their fault, not my fault. But my dad finally came to me and put me in the corner and said, son, you're going to have to start paying for these clubs being repaired. Hmm. You know, that started hurting the pocketbook when you didn't have a real big, deep pocket. So, he said, I want you to try a different approach. And God love my dad, Frank Sr., for taking me aside and giving me a little ass whipping, which I needed. It made me look into the lighter side of the game. And I think for kids, it's good to get frustrated. It's good to have adrenaline pumping, but you got to learn to control it. And I wasn't controlling it. And he got to the lighter side of that, and he said, boom. And then all of a sudden, the whole world appeared to me, and I went, I like this better, much better.
You became better.
Yeah, a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. You go to Edison Junior College. How does that happen? That's in Florida, Fort Myers, Florida.
That's good. See, all my scholarships coming out of high school are in northern schools. I mean, further north than Indiana University. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, but the last time I checked, when the Ducks flew south, they went further south than Kentucky. I mean, right?
Yep.
Am I right or wrong? They're all going south. Hell, they're going down to Arkansas and everywhere else. I had a buddy of mine that played junior golf with, Bob Prang from Indianapolis, the Prang family. He was at Edison Junior College, and he called me on the phone. I don't know, let's see, it wasn't, I'm going to say, toward the end of school, my senior year, he said, don't sign anything. He said, I've got a school here in Fort Myers, Florida, that I think you'll be interested in. I said, okay. So my dad and I jumped on a plane and flew to Fort Myers, Florida, Edison Junior College. We looked at it for a weekend. I flew back. I graduated from high school. I packed my bags and went straight down here. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it was the greatest experience I've ever had in my life. One, you know, I grew up on bank grass all my life. And as a golfer, people know when you live in the Midwest or even further north, it's mostly bank grass. But when I got down here, I learned to play in the winds. I learned to read Bermuda grass, which is an entirely different surface than what I grew up on. So there was a lot of positives to the move that I made, and I thank Bob Prang for that to this day, for giving me that opportunity to come down here. Mm-hmm. Plus, I had a good coach down here. Bill Zaway was outstanding when I was a coach, as a player.
Yeah. Did you happen to know a guy by the name of Hugh Thimbler down there, the basketball coach?
Oh, Hugh?
Yeah.
Ever. He was a legend down here.
I know.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Everybody knew Hugh. He was the greatest guy in the world.
His son.
And he always had a great basketball team.
I know. Yeah, his son, Terry.
Hugh was the best. Oh, I mean, I got coached him. Oh, he was the best.
Yeah.
Absolutely the best.
He's still down there.
Well, God love him, because I'm going to tell you what. He had a great program, basketball program down there. So when I was there.
His son, Terry, and I were high school teammates. That's how I know him. So
now, how about that, Mark? Is it not a small world, buddy?
It is a small world.
It is a small world.
No question. So were you there for 2 years at Edison?
I was here 2 years at Edison, and I went to the University of Houston.
Got a scholarship there?
I sure did. Yeah, I got a full ride over there to Houston. And what happened over there was that Daddy Dave and I, Dave Williams, didn't quite see eye to eye. You know, I've always taken a game as the light side of it. Again, I had grown out at 10, 11, 12. He tried to teach me that the other guy was an enemy. Don't talk to him. Don't say anything to him. And we just never got along. So I quit about 3 weeks before my junior year in college. And I told my dad, I said, do I stay and give the game of golf up just to get a degree? Or do I want to pursue my dreams? My dad said, you do what you feels like. Well, my dreams were to play the game of golf, and I knew I was good enough to do it. So, but it was just it was a coaching deal. You know, Dave Williams and I did not see eye to eye on my theory of the game and his theory of the game. I've always thought if a guy hits a great shot, you have to tell him it was a great shot. Mm-hmm. So pat the guy on the back. What the hell? How hard is it to hit a good shot? It's hard enough. So. Yeah, we had a few battles between us, and we just didn't get along too well. But that was probably the biggest mistake I made, was going to Houston. But, again, I did it. I committed to it. I played three-fourths of a year, and then I turned pro.
Ah, okay. Did you ever have an offer from, like, Indiana University or an Indiana State College for golf?
I said my schools were all northern.
Yeah.
Northern schools. Yeah, they always all came up from Wisconsin and further north. And that's kind of crazy the way it was. But, no, I did not. I did not.
Interesting.
And I would love to see Indiana's program, you know, get better. But, you know, they got such a crappy-ass golf course up there. It's hard to recruit when you got such a crap golf course. And I'm sorry, but I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah, yeah. Would you have gone to IU if they had offered because it was close to home?
I might have. Yeah. I might have taken a considerable look at it. You know, I had one of my daughters go up there, and she absolutely loved her experience in Indiana. I have a lot of friends that go to Indiana University, and they had a great time at Indiana, got a great degree. So I might look at it. Yeah, I might have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you said, like you said, you turned pro in 1973 and work your way up. And
I did. You know, I played the mini tours there for a year.
Okay.
In 73, I played the mini tours. And then when the school came up, which back then, when the PGA Tour school came up, it was only came around one time a year in November. I don't know, I was packing my bag, and I shoved something up underneath my left thumb. And I really can't tell you how I did it. It just takes talent to do these things when you pack and travel like we do. But my left thumb got about three times the size. I couldn't swing a golf club for like 3 weeks, so I had to X out. Mm. So I went on and played the mini tours for another year and came back to the school in 74 and then won the school in 74. So... No, it was all positive. It was all good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Who was financing you in those early years?
Well, my mother and dad were.
Yeah.
God bless them. I mean, to this day, I think I'm still paying the debt. You know what I mean? And I will pay the debt till I die, for God's sakes, because they gave me the opportunity and the chances and the kind words it took to get me out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there ever a time, like on the mini tours or early in your professional career, where you questioned your decision and thought about giving it up?
No, never.
Okay.
You know what? I made a decision. I never looked back.
Okay.
Never, ever looked back. I don't care. Good days, bad days. I had more good days than I had bad, but no. I never, never, ever questioned my decision.
Okay. Well, let's talk about your first Masters appearance, 1979.
I might question that a little bit, but
I'm sure. I think you surprised some people. Your first appearance in the Masters in 1979, and you win it, and you're just the third person to win it in your first attempt. And of course, the other two were the guys who won it the first 2 years of the Masters. So
give people the names. You know the names.
One was Gene Sarazen, right?
Right.
And I can't remember.
Well, the very first guy to win it.
And I don't remember that one.
His first name was Smith. His last name was Smith.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what? You know what's amazing about that, Mark? You think about all the talented golfers who have gone through those pearly gates and driven down Magnolia Lane, and there's just three of us that have done that.
Yeah.
Now, that kind of blows my mind in a way. But when I got to the place, I was very fortunate. That's when we had to use the local caddies back then. I got a caddy that we clicked, Jeriah Beard, Jerry Beard, to this day. We're still friends. God love him. You know, we had to use the black caddies back then. Mm-hmm. But we clicked. He told me, and when I tell you he told me where to hit it. If I miss, you bail to the right. If I miss, you bail to the left. it was just a tremendous walk around the golf course for 72 holes.
Yeah, and you trusted him completely, huh?
Well, it was like us seeing my dog with a blind man. When I tell people that, they kind of laugh at me, but I'm telling you the truth. He said that if you bail to the right.
Yeah.
They'll make it easier on us. But honest to God, the guy led me around that golf course perfectly, but I was playing well, thank God, when I got there. And when I saw the golf course for the first time on that Monday, and I played a practice round with Hale Irwin, I had Jerry on the bag, I knew it was going to be a good week because I could feel it. You know, sometimes you see golf courses that just fit your eye.
Yeah.
From tee to fairway and fairways to greens. I mean, it just fit. It's kind of like Wingfoot was when I won in 84 up there in the Open. The golf course just fit my eye. I mean, every shot that I wanted to play, it just was perfect. So it was, people say, well, how come more people don't win U.S. Opens? Well, not every golf course fits a golfer's eye. You know, sometimes they're playing defensive. But when you play defensive, that's usually when the golf course wins.
Mm.
But I was playing offensive the whole time there.
And you were just randomly assigned to that caddy, right?
Yeah, well, they had a lottery. They had a lottery. Jerry will tell you, they had a lottery there in the caddy room. And he was he got the short straw, I guess.
He said, I got this new guy. Who's this?
Well, I think it was the short straw. Well, remember, I'm in the Z's. There's not a lot of pickings down in the Z's. But, yeah, it was great. It was great. We had a great time, a great week. And, I still thank him to this day because he's the one who led me around that golf course.
Yeah, and he's still around, huh? He's still alive?
Jeriah's still living. Yes, he is. He's he works at a scientific department down there. I mean, he's a very smart man, but he caddied there at Augusta on the side, and it was beautiful. I mean, we had a great time.
Yeah. Well, you won that in a sudden-death playoff with Ed Snead and Tom Watson. Did you just not know enough to be nervous in that situation? Or, I mean,
Mark, what's nervousness? Afraid to excel?
No.
I mean, you don't get nervous in that kind of a position. You want to exceed. That's your dream. That's what you dreamed about all your life. It's a excitement. I'm not saying it's nervousness. It's excitement. Now, the thing is, can you control the excitement? I was able to do that. Because I play it as a game. It is a hard game, a very difficult game, but, in my eyes, it's only a game. Some people going to win, some people going to lose. But I felt very, very good going down that playoff.
Yeah. Were you ever nervous or afraid on a golf course?
No, I can't say I've ever been afraid of golf courses. Golf courses will embarrass you, but I'm never scared of them. And I think when you're scared of a golf course, that's when you shoot high numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, then the U.S. Open in 84, you win a playoff over Greg Norman. And, you gained some fame at that point. Time showed your sense of humor by waving that white flag when he sunk a long putt to force the playoff.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking the whole time? God damn, I got to spend another day in New York. What the hell's he doing? God, I love New York. I love New York. But no, it was a great battle. You know, I'm standing back on the tee and I'm watching him hit his second shot. We're waiting a little bit. And by the time I got to my tee shot, he was on the back of the green. So I figured that was his second shot to the back left. Now, this putt he had a 10-foot break in it, and it's straight downhill on very, very, very fast greens, almost as fast as Augusta's. I mean, they were rolling probably a 13 and a half, 14. And he hosed it. So I always saw the drive in the putt. So I was assuming he had made that for three. And I looked at my caddy, Mike Mazzio, at the time, and I said, he's just beat us. Because I said, there's no way to get it close to this hole where the pin was. I mean, the best you can do is 20 feet behind it. Or if you really mess up, maybe 20 feet below it. But where the pin was, there was no way to make birdies unless you just hosed a tremendous putt. So then a USGA guy, before I hit my second shot in the 18, he said, that was for a par. I said, for par? I said, where the hell did he get a second shot? He said, in the stands, which were 40 yards right of the green over there.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's crazy. And Greg and I have had some great battles. He He's paid me back, though. He paid me back down to TPC there in, what, 94 or something, whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. And he waved a white flag for you the next day, so.
Well, I know, but the next day, I'm, trust me, when I say you're playing well, you're not intimidated by anything. I mean, when you're hitting the ball well and you're on the numbers, boom, the game is very easy. It's when you're hitting a little off-center and you're scrambling and you're in the game, that's when the doubt comes in your mind. That's when the player who's hitting it solid has a big advantage.
Yeah. Did you ever play with a golfer who got mad at you for your lighthearted approach to it and, you know, your conversation with the fans and the fun
you
had?
Don't really care. You know what? Don't really care.
Yeah.
But, you know, that golfer's miserable. That's all I can tell you. He's having a tough life. He shouldn't be out there anyway.
Yeah.
No, I've never. The great thing about the guys on tour, they're all pretty nice.
Yeah. So no problem.
Very easygoing type guys. No, they know it's a difficult game. Some days are going to be on. Some days are going to be off, and they accept it.
Yeah. And you won. I'm curious how this factors into your memories as far as your accomplishments. The Bob Jones Award in 1985 for sportsmanship.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah,
I mean, I guess that says that.
The 6 months after back surgery, they awarded me that.
Huh?
I love them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was beautiful. That was a great award. A tremendous award.
Who votes on that?
Again, you know, this is a young guy from Indiana has never accepted too many awards, but I was touched and honored by that. That meant a lot to me.
Do the other golfers vote on that? Who votes on that?
Well, I think that's USGA and the PGA of America.
Yeah.
But you know what was nice about it? After I had that 6 months off from the first back surgery that I had, one of the three that I had, the 6 months, that was a major deal because I had to teach myself how to walk again. And to get back and play the game that I really loved and play it competitively and win the Bay Hill Arnold Palmer Classic there in 85, that not only told me a lot about myself, but that I could play with the best in the world again, which, God, what a relief that was.
Yeah.
Because 6 months earlier, I couldn't have told you, I might have been in a wheelchair. Yeah. But I had a major, major back surgery, and Dr. Markov up in New York did a tremendous job. Cool. I mean, that's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Were you a workout guy back then? Did you work out a lot?
You know, I'm going to tell you how I feel about that workout stuff, Mark. Every time I get that thought, I have to sit down and let that pass thought. You know, just let it pass.
You didn't lift weights or anything like
no,
that?
No, no. You know what? I've never lifted weights in my life. Even when I played football and basketball, I never lifted weights. Hmm. Never did.
Do you
and
wish?
I think kids, and I really think kids are, it's nice to be muscular and all that, but in the long run, is it good for you? I'm not sure it is.
So you don't question that. You don't wish you could go back and start your golf career again today and work out all the time and all that, like some of the guys do today?
Stop it. Are you kidding me? My God, are you kidding? No, if I started my golf career again, I'd do the same thing I did.
Okay.
I would.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, my injuries came from basketball. It wasn't anything to do with golf. It was a basketball injury that I got submarine my junior year in high school. And the doctor told me that later on in life, he said, you will have some major spinal injury. Well, there you go. So,
okay.
But whatever. It's all part of playing sports. You're going to have injuries, you know.
Yeah. So, what, you're going in for a layup and somebody undercuts you?
Well, wish you hadn't brought that up. It brings pain to my butt just thinking about it. Yeah. That's exactly why I was on a fast break. And the last thing I remember, I got the ball and I took a step, and the next thing they're telling me, well, we'll take you to the hospital. We think you have spinal damage. I'm going, oh, that's good. Where does pain come from? Yeah.
Wow.
So, we were playing our arch rivals, Providence High School.
I was going to ask who you were playing.
Well, that's who it was, Providence High School, one of our arch rivals. I went to the public high school because they have a golf program, and the Catholic school didn't, even though I'm a Catholic. So I was forced to go to the public high school. But yeah, some young man undercut me and it flipped me, and I landed on the back of my neck and ripped all the lower muscles out of my back.
But, oh wow!
You know what? If I do it over again, do it again. What the hell? I mean, it's athletes. It's athletics. Injuries do happen. They can fix them. Maybe not 100%, but they can fix them.
Yeah. Well, the one controversy you've had in your career was 1997. At the Masters. Does that follow you today? I mean, is that still something that gets brought up to you? I mean, I know, you know, you made the joke about the menu with Tiger Woods, and I know you've talked about it with Tiger.
I love people. People need to get out of their shells and live a life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But let me just say one thing about that. I'll make it quick and sweet. That was all a joke. Right. Now, the press takes it, and they cut the tape here, there, and everybody was laughing when I made the comment. I mean, even the press was laughing. But when you saw it with Jim Huber on CNN, they cut all the sound out so they don't look bad.
Yeah.
And they got me. I mean, what the hell? As an athlete, I don't think like most people do. What the hell? We've been battling for years, black, white, yellow, or whatever, through sports. So I really didn't phase me a doggone bit.
Yeah.
I really didn't think I'd said anything wrong.
And it didn't seem to be a big problem for Tiger either, did it, from what I understand?
Well, it wasn't Tiger. It was his agent. So, but whatever. I paid the price for that. And am I, to this day, still a little bit leery of people around me? Yes, I am. Yeah. And I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay. Yeah, because you lost sponsorships, right?
No. You know what? The Kmart thing, I mean, trust me, I had 13 great years with Kmart. But my contract was up at the end of the year, so it wasn't that big a deal.
Okay.
They wanted to make a big deal, to make news, but they didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
They'd already told me that we were not renewing, and so it's fine. God bless you all. We had 13 beautiful years with you all.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what the good thing is? That it didn't happen in this age of social media, because if it happened
social media is unbelievable. You know, some of these guys need to get a life.
Yep.
Get into the locker room and see how these guys really are. You'd hear so much trash in there, you'd go, oh, what can you say that? Well, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all friends. They're all buddies. I mean, we joke around. I mean, Mike, you ought to hear some of the things we say to Jimmy Thorpe out here and Jimmy Dent when he was out here. I mean, hell, they're like brothers of ours.
Yeah.
I mean, we joke around, but some people might take it a little serious, and it's not serious. It's just a joke.
Yeah. Well, if you know somebody, you can say things like that. You know,
white man cannot. Now, I'm going to tell you, white man cannot say that. And for some crazy reason, this crazy world we live in, a black man can say it, but a white man can't say it. Yeah. It's against the rules.
Yeah.
But we're all equal. But we've accepted that, and we move on. All right? I mean, that's just the way it is.
Right. Okay. Well, do I understand that this is your last year on the Champions Tour? Is this?
Well, now, wait a minute. I took partial retirement here a year ago.
Yeah.
Which what that means is that I can only play up to 11 events. Now, the reason I did it is because I've got the vodka company coming on,
mm-hmm.
and it's coming on very strong, which requires a lot of time. I have the IndyCar with Eddie Carpenter. We're a sponsor of the IndyCar, which takes time, and there just wasn't a lot of time to play the game of golf. So in my life, I mean, I'm still traveling a lot, doing other things, just not playing golf.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you miss playing more, or are you kind of done with it? I mean, I know you still play, but do you look forward to playing more, or is it just kind of old now?
No, it's time for me to step aside. I always told my wife, I said, I would like to retire when I'm able to do things. You know, so many people retire at 70 and 68. Hell, they can't do anything. Well, I want to retire while I'm still enjoying my grandkids and go out and have fun with them. Play around with them. I don't want to be crippled up in a goddamn chair. Excuse me, I didn't mean to cuss her, but in a chair. So, yeah, I retired at the right time. I have not looked back, Mark. It's been perfect. I mean, I play in 9 events now, maybe 11. If I stretch it out, I might have 11, but 9 events is what I have scheduled for this year. And it's just beautiful with all the other stuff that I have going on.
Yeah. Would you say that you still work on your game? Are there still areas that you're trying to get better?
Oh, wait a minute, Mark. I never said I worked on it. Hey, work. Why are you talking about work? My God. You know what? I still practice. I still play. Yeah. Only because I love the game so much. Yeah, we still compete. Now, is it at the level it was when I was younger? No. By a long shot. I've had 3 back surgeries. So that eliminates the practice putting part of it. Now, if I wake up in the morning and I catch a feel for the greens, when I'm out there, I putt well. When I don't, well, what time I putt terrible.
Yeah.
But it's only because of that, you know, my body won't allow me to do it like it used to. But I accept that. Those are challenges, again, you just accept as a professional.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an old Bob Hope joke, by the way, that like if you watch a game, you're a spectator. If you play a game, you're an athlete. And if you work at a game, you're a golfer.
So, yeah, there you go. Yeah, you know. I love Bobby. I love Mr. Hope is the best. He and Mr. Crosby were the best.
Did you know them well?
Yeah, well, I knew them enough.
Yeah.
When we got to the Bob Hope every year, they'd always come up and said, Mr. Hope wants to play with you again. I'm like, that's fine. I'll do it. I love him. I mean, I love the man. The man was a great guy.
Yeah, he was a good golfer, too.
Hey, well, you know what? In his younger years, he was.
Yeah.
He loved the game. He loved the game. He did.
Yeah. Okay. So just one question related to golf skills. What's the most common mistake the hackers make? Is there something you constantly see when you're watching the weekend golfers on the range that they need to correct? Is there any one fundamental?
My God, I see it every week. Yeah, they try to hit the ball too far. They swing without balance. Now, balance is the key in golf.
Mm-hmm.
Always swing with balance. I played with a gentleman today down here today at Naples National that wanted to swing as hard as he could and just hit as far as he could, and he had no control of the ball for golf ball. And I finally got him after about 13 holes. I said, you know, you can dance after you hit. Don't dance before. Now, what I mean by that is that his feet were moving. He wanted to hit it so hard. I said, but keep your feet on the ground, swing with balance, and then after that ball is hit, you do whatever you want to because it's all over with. Yeah. And he started hitting the ball pretty well. But, yeah, most people try to hit the ball too doggone far, and that's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah,
you know, you watch the great players in the world. I mean, the PGA Tour, the LPGA Tour, the Champions Tour, whatever tour it is. You watch these kids swing and the great ones. They all have balance. You got to have balance in your golf swing.
Okay. Okay, let's talk some business. How's Covered Bridge doing?
Covered Bridge doing fine. God bless them. It's doing great, yeah.
Okay. And then the vodka business. How did you get started in the vodka business?
You really want to know it, don't you?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to know that story. Well, you know what, Marky? When you're sitting around, again, when I was thinking about retirement 8 years ago, thinking about when I was going to do it. You're always looking for something new to get involved in, just keep your name involved and stay in the game. 8 years ago, I was in my office talking about different wines. They wanted me to put my name on a wine, you know, an estate wine. They even came to my farm, said we can do an estate winery here. And I said, no. I said, you're talking to the wrong guy, gentlemen. I said, I'm not a wine drinker. I said, I couldn't tell you from a good wine from a bad wine. I can tell you like a sweet from a dry wine, but that's all. But wines all taste the same to me. They're just my taste buds. So I'm not a wine drinker. So I wasn't going to put my name on something, and I never have in my 40 years being a professional. Something that I didn't really believe in. It's just one of those things that's just my standard. That's the way it's always been and always will be. So I'm sitting in my office 8 years ago. We're having this discussion with my group that was with Fuzzy Zilla Productions at the time. And one of my buddies walked by the door and overheard the conversation. He yelled in. He goes, well, why wouldn't you do a vodka? God knows you drink enough of it. And I went, bam. It just like the lights came on. I went, yeah, there you go. Let's do a vodka. Nobody ever tried to do a vodka.
Yeah.
You know, Aykroyd's got his skull head out there. But the stuff inside his skull head, it's just crap. I said, let's do a vodka, one of the premium vodkas of the world. And that's what we've done. We have we have blended up there with Bend, Oregon, Bend Distilleries in Bend, Oregon. They have given us a great blend, a great mix to my tasting, and it's been outstanding. It's the little booger is growing and growing gangbusters.
Yeah, it's doing well, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we're very, very fortunate. I mean, I knock on wood every day when I see numbers, and but yeah, it's you know, we're priced in between the goose and the kettles, but I'll put it up against any of them, and it's not me, Mark. It's not me, only because I say that. Is that we keep getting these gold medals from these taste testings, which go random across the country,
mm-hmm.
like Chicago, New York, L.A., and they keep giving us 94 to 95 ratings. So I know I have good stuff in the bottle, and we got a beautiful bottle for them. And And like I said, I just want people to enjoy. As we say on the golf label, always listen to your caddy, drink responsibly.
Yeah. It seems like you have a lot of imitators. It seems like a lot of other people have come out with vodkas in the last few years. Am I right?
Well, I mean, they do, but they, you know what? They have no target market. Hey, think about it. There's no target market for their vodkas. You know, they think they come out with a bottle of vodka and put it on a shelf and it's going to sell. You know, my market was golf course. That was my target market, the golf course market. And that's the reason why we designed the bottle around the golf course idea. As you see it, it's like a 3D bottle with the golf course scene in the back. Last year we came out with the Indianapolis 500 bottle, which was the Indy 500 cars coming down from turn four to turn one, the start of the race. Well, of course, we did have our car, number 20, leading, which was outstanding, even though he did get the pole last year. Now, you do remember that, right?
Yes.
Eddie Carpenter did get the pole last year.
I do. I absolutely
do. So, I mean, that all happened 8 months before, and then all of a sudden, Eddie gets a pole, and, oh, it's couldn't happen any finer. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
We think we had a target market to shoot at, which was the golf course market.
And
most vodkas come out. There's 8 or 10 vodkas every month that come out, but they have no target market. They're just out there just sitting on a shelf. The golf course market was my market, and that's the one we're shooting at.
What about the racing market, though, now that you're sponsoring?
Well, now the racing, God love the racing fans, IndyCar fans. Yeah, they have, we only made a certain number of bottles with the IndyCar thing, and they bought those babies right up the first week. They were lapped up, and proud to say that was a great deal. Now we have other things in our making. We're going with a rodeo bottle, which I think we might be the only company that can do this. We have a rodeo, which rodeo is huge in Texas, huge in California. Let's see, out there in Calgary, Canada, Oklahoma. So we're going to bring a rodeo bottle out, two bottles of that, and we have also one which we're very excited about for the Wounded Warriors.
Oh, the Wounded Warriors, yeah.
Well, we are, yeah. It's going to be for the Wounded Warriors, and they get a proceed. Whatever's sold from the Wounded Warriors bottle, they get a kickback on it. Because, I mean, after all, we need to take care of those people who have taken care of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What about basketball? Is there a basketball market now for your vodka?
Nah, I don't think so. You never know. We never know what's down the line for us. But, we are a company that has the opportunity to do these different bottles. And instead of going out with the flavors and colors and all the other stuff, I think we'll just do the specialty bottles. Yeah. People like specialty things.
They do, no question. Talking about the 500, did you go to the race as a kid?
Oh, yeah, I've been there. You bet.
Yeah?
You know, it's amazing to me. You know, I'm trying to slow my life down at 62 years old, and damn it, it's getting faster. I mean, my God, I'm in a deal now with Indy, with Eddie Carpenter. Hell, those guys go 230-some-odd miles an hour.
Yeah.
My golly. Fastest my wife's ever been is like 55, 60 in the fast lane. So.
But, like, were you coming up to the races, like, in high school or junior high? Did you come up to the race?
Well, we went up to time trials. Time trials is what we always went to. We never really went to the race, per se.
Yeah.
But we went to the time trials. That was great to see. I mean, so those guys blow it. And when I say they blow it, they blow it out. And the respect I have for those kids who drive those cars, it takes a tremendous talent. Mm-hmm. And I respect them every day. They jump in that cockpit and drive that car around those racetracks. It just blows my mind how they can keep them on the ground.
Yeah, it is. So what does a former Masters winner do with the green jacket? Does it just hang in your closet back at home? Or, you know, do you ever...
No. See, the deal is you can only take it away the first week.
Oh, okay.
First week.
I got you.
After you win, you take it the first week to get your pictures done. There's only been one jacket that's ever been missed, and Gary Player took it. It's over in South Africa, but he's the only one. The rest of them have all come back.
Okay.
Hang in our lockers. When we get there, we can wear it that week of the tournament.
Okay.
So that's the deal, but it stays at Augusta.
Okay. Will you go back this year?
I go back every year. Yeah, but that's an honor to do that.
Yeah.
It's an honor to go back and see the young guys, see the new champion, no matter what they have on the menu. But, yeah, it's it's fun to wear that jacket around. I don't parade around fun like some clown. I wear it like 2 days out of the whole week, but only because that's just the way I am. I want to be like everybody else, enjoying the tournament, having a good time. But it is a very special feeling on Tuesday night when you put it on and go to that dinner.
Oh, it's got to be. It's got to be. What do you consider the highlight of your golf career?
I'm not sure I've had it yet.
Well, then you better hurry if you haven't.
Just being involved. Being involved in the greatest game, one of the greatest games in the world. Having the opportunity to meet the greatest people in the world, which I've had, and I met them. A lot of them, having an opportunity to choke at some of the biggest tournaments. Some I have, some I haven't. Yeah. I don't know. Listen, Mark, my career has been tremendous. Would I do it again? Like I say, I'd do it the same way, but I've enjoyed every day, every minute of it.
Yeah, okay. Okay, Buzzy, I got a theme question that I ask everybody for this show. That's when you're sleeping at night, do you dream of playing golf? You play golf in your dreams?
You know what? I'm probably one of the few that say no. I don't bring it home.
Okay.
I do not bring it home.
That's good then. That's good.
I really don't. I dream maybe of hitting a fastball from one of those pitchers at 109 mile an hour or whatever. But I don't bring the game to the house.
Okay. It's funny. I get all kinds of answers to that question. In fact, Slick Leonard said he had a dream once that he won the Masters. He was a basketball player, and he won the Masters for one of his dreams.
Did you ask him how it felt? Did you ask him how it felt?
Oh, yeah. It felt good.
It's a tremendous feeling. It really is. Beat the best at what they do, it's a tremendous feeling.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Okay. Hey, Fuzzy. Thanks so much. I really appreciate this.
Mark, my pleasure, buddy. Anytime you need anything, just give me a holler. You got my phone.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not that difficult to get a hold of.
Okay. Now, hey, listen, I will burn a CD and be happy to mail it to you if you like. It might be great for your family history. Maybe your kids and grandchildren would like to hear it someday. You know,
well, I appreciate that.
Where would you like me to mail it?
Yeah, well, I'll mail it to Santa Claus. No, I'm just kidding. He only delivers once a year. That's perfect. No, I'll give you my address at
418
Deer Run Trace.
Deer Run Trace.
Run Trace. TRAC.
Okay.
That's Floyd's Knobs, Indiana.
Floyd's Knobs. Okay. And what's that zip?
47119.
119. Okay, I'll get it in mail. I think I'll run this next week. And again, it'll air a couple times, and we'll get the word out, and I'll get a CD in the mail to that address, and 50 years from now, your grandkids can listen to it. So
I appreciate it, Bubby. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Buzzy.
You have a good evening, partner.
Okay, you too.
Okay.
Bye.
You bet.